works for The Guardian will link to her recent coverage from Kharkiv. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
When I first came to Brookhaven town,
way, hey, 90.1,
there was no good music to be heard around.
Way, hey, 90.1.
Then one day I turned on the dial.
Way, hey, 90.1.
There I found music to make me smile.
Way, hey, 90.1.
I waited for a legal ID.
Way, hey, 90.1.
The DJ said WUSB.
Way, hey, 90.1.
They start each day with the rising sun.
Way, hey, 90.1.
Don't ever finish till after day is done.
Way, hey, 90.1.
So if you want good music to hear.
Way, hey, 90.1.
There's a station in Stony Brook you ought to hear.
Way, hey, 90.1.
So if you like the sounds, do take a look.
Way, hey, 90.1.
At WUSB Stony
Brook. Hey, hey, hey.
Jones, a big audio dynamite. Whenever I'm in Stony Brook, I listen to WUSB.
Covered wagon, medicine shawl. Take you to a place where the healing flows. Oh, oh, we can spin it. We got the juice. Won't take your soul in a shiny shoes. Oh.
And that's WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock. Time for another edition of Off the Wall. very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Elstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. No, Tuesday evening. It's Tuesday, right?
Yeah, it's Tuesday.
And that voice you hear now is the voice of my co-host, Kyle. How
yes.
you doing?
I'm doing.
Yeah? Well.
Are you excited?
I am excited. I don't know why.
Canada.
You're right, Canada. Canada is in the World Cup. Congratulations to Canada. Wow.
Betcha.
They kicked Jamaica's ass on Sunday.
Sorry about that.
Well, it happens. It's interesting, too, because the United States also played on Sunday. They were playing Costa Rica, I believe, and they also had a resounding victory. But
Panama.
Oh, you're right. It was Panama.
I think it was Panama.
It was Panama. Yeah. Costa Rica was involved in something
it's
else.
It's okay if you don't get it exactly right.
Well, it doesn't matter because they didn't advance anyway. They still have to play more.
There is more. Yes.
Yeah. So it's Canada right now has qualified before the United States has qualified. And we're not sure that the United States will qualify. So, yeah. Are those air raid sirens?
Yes, I believe that is an air raid siren.
Okay, we're listening. We're listening to Kiev live. I didn't know that it was up. It actually surprises me.
I'm assuming the audio is from Kiev. They may have switched it around from what it had been in previous times, but it's the same stream.
Uh-huh.
So I believe this is in somewhere in the city of Kiev, yes.
I'm not sure it's coming across,
Kiev.
But if it is, that's what's happening right now live over in Ukraine. So, yeah, interesting. What do you think, Kyle? I'm optimistic. You know, I feel like there's a chance for... A chance for peace. I mean,
well, there were peace talks in Turkey. I believe they were a mediator. They were serving as a mediator.
I don't know about that. I'm talking about the apology. I mean, that matters. That counts for something.
Oh, the apology.
Yeah.
Oh no, I know what you're talking about. That's a different kind of diplomacy.
No, I'm talking about the Will Smith and Chris Rock thing.
Changed it on me.
No,
quick.
I didn't change it. The sirens came on by themselves. I had nothing to do with that.
He's here.
What? No.
Look, Will Smith's here. That's why the sirens are going off.
No, listen. That was our top story. The sirens came on.
Okay.
We're going to talk about Ukraine. We're going to talk about Ukraine. I promise. But right now, I want to talk about the fight.
Okay.
You know, the battle, the war that's going on between those two.
Mm-hmm.
And the point is Will Smith apologized to Chris Rock. So, I mean, that's got to count for something, right? I don't think they met in Turkey, though. I think you're wrong about that.
Yeah, you're right. I was thinking of a different a different diplomatic
exchange. Try to keep up.
I think he had to apologize because the Academy said they were going to review the incident.
He had to apologize because he was wrong.
He absolutely was wrong.
We were watching this on Sunday night, and, you know, I simply could not believe it. I was one of many people who thought it was fake. He really hit him. He really went up there on stage and hit Chris Rock. And the whole thing is just so ridiculously stupid because, the joke wasn't that much of an insult. At least in my opinion, it wasn't that much of an insult. The actions. Okay. For those who don't know, the Academy Awards took place on Sunday. The most recent ones. Well, we find out what film we're going to be watching when we get to that one, which is only, I think, three away from where we are now. We're up to, I think, 2018. Okay, so Chris Rock was out there making, a presentation of one sort or another, making jokes like people do when they're on stage.
He's probably announcing another category and I think had a little bit of a routine, some time to talk. And there were three other comedians, the female hosts. But, he was just doing a feature or, like, a segment of
right. And Will Smith and Jada Smith, his wife. You know, no one's really saying her name. They're just saying Will Smith's wife. And that really annoys me, too. But, okay, fine. They're in the front row. And when you're in the front row, you're the object of jokes. It's always been the case. Always. And he made a joke about some other people. And then he made a joke about Will Smith and about Jada Smith. And he basically made a joke about her hairstyle. Now, okay, apparently, you know, she has a condition that, you know, I didn't know anything about this condition. I thought it was like some horrible disease. She's losing her hair. Okay, big deal. You know, everyone loses their hair. She's losing her hair. She shaved her head. It's a choice to how you address that particular disease. She decided to be very open and public about it. This is Hollywood. Anyone can just wear whatever hair they want and nobody will know. All right, people talk about this all the time. Remember Don Rickles? I mean, that was a guy that really got in people's faces on the stage. He'd point out people and make fun of their physical appearance. It wasn't exactly the nicest thing to do, but it was part of the routine. You knew what you were getting into. And when you're there in the front row, you're open to ridicule for all sorts of things. And this, you know, this wasn't making fun of a disability. This wasn't, being mean-spirited. It's simply saying, you know, something like nice hairstyle, because that's what it was. She basically shaved her head. Anybody could have done that. Could have been Sinead O'Connor, and made a reference to G.I. Jane, which, you know, is I believe a film from the past involving a female G.I. Joe military.
A remake of G.I. Joe.
Now, for Will Smith to be so insulted by that, you know, I could take this a few steps further and say, really, you don't like being compared to a member of the military? That's you don't respect the, you know, we could go on with that if you want. But basically, he thought it was funny. If you watch, he laughed at the joke. And then 5 seconds later, he's walking up on stage about to slug Chris Rock because, Jada didn't think it was funny. And, you know, she has the right not to think it's funny. But you know what else? She has the ability to defend herself. She doesn't need Will Smith, you know, to punch some guy for her because they don't like the way that she was referred to sitting in the front row at the Academy Awards. Come on already. I was watching some news coverage of this. I think it was on CNN, where somebody was basically defending him, saying, oh, he was just defending a queen. She's not a queen. We don't have queens. Yeah. People who are celebrities are not royalty. We have to stop this. We have to stop treating people as if they're you know, some kind of god or goddess, and realize we're all human beings. You know, we're doing this with the actual royal family. We should be able to do this with celebrities as well. Chris Rock did nothing wrong. He was maybe a little bit overly familiar. Maybe he misread the situation, thought he was just making a joke about hairstyle, whatever. He handled himself very well. I mean, being slugged in the face right there and basically making a joke about it 2 seconds later and not wanting to file a police report, that shows to me some maturity. And I don't know. They should have thrown him out. They should have thrown Will Smith out of the ceremony at that point. Whether or not he ever comes back, that's up to the Academy. That's up to the community. You know, he's starting to realize he was wrong. He sure didn't realize he was wrong when he won Best Actor. He was basically trying to tie the film into what he did somehow, saying, yeah, you know, I was protecting people in the film and I'm protecting people here. It's like, no, you weren't. You're acting like an idiot, and you basically insulted everybody. You know, if I broke into the Academy Awards, you know, wearing nothing but my underwear, and I urinated on the stage, okay, and I wasn't even nominated for anything, I think I would be treating the Academy with more respect than Will Smith. That's open to debate, but that's just my feeling.
Yeah, I could see how you would draw that conclusion for where you're feeling and
it's the first image that came to
you're
mind.
Coming from. I'm with you. I think that Chris Rock was doing his job. He's up there, you know, presenting and making jokes. And I think of people making fun of baldness. There's countless jokes about men's hairlines and how they're having, you know, balding and issues about hair in general. Responding to the way Jada was not having any of this joke. And, I mean, as you said, like, it was easy enough to not take yourself so seriously. Like, imagine a world where she thought it was funny. That's a possible outcome. What if she had enough, self-confidence or just, you know, could understand that it was a joke aimed at them. And, they're right there. I just don't understand why she had to be completely offended by something.
She can be offended, but it's the action afterwards. And I'm curious how that got communicated. You know, because Will Smith was laughing, And she was looking disapproving, and the camera cut away, and then literally 5 seconds later, Will Smith is up on stage. So did she, like, give him a nod or something, or did, you know, how was it communicated? Stop laughing, go up there and hit him. You know, maybe she didn't even communicate that. Maybe he just saw that she wasn't, you know, smiling and immediately took it upon himself to march up on stage. I'm just curious how that happened so quickly.
No, she was just like this, like, searing, frigid, uppity, like, you know, I don't know, just totally standoffish to everyone, as though, like, you know, like you said, like, she's on some pedestal when, like, she's right there in the front row. What do you expect? I don't think that that you would allow that in any other kind of venue, to be welcomed back to a place like that. It insulted so many other people, like the Williams twins, whom the story was about, the rest of the audience there, the other awards Questlove's speech
considering how the rest of the awards went. It was so inclusive and beautiful. And to have it upstaged by this idiocy, that to me is just the ultimate disrespect.
I'm biased. I like Chris Rock. And I think, you know, I won't miss much, you know, as far as Will Smith's career and stuff. But I don't think he should be welcomed back there.
No.
And if they are welcomed in any way, they should be, like, off to the side, way off into the, nobody section.
And, you know, since we're doing this whole thing, we've been doing it for a long time where we watch Academy Award-winning films year by year. We're up to 2018 now. I was scared to death that Will Smith's film was going to win and we would have to watch that. So I'm glad that it didn't win and we don't have to watch it. but boy, that was something else. And I'm glad Coda won. And I'm just, you know, thrilled with many of the other things that happened on stage. It was an interesting night, but boy, people have to grow up. And,
yeah,
and we have to stop putting people on pedestals.
Yeah, and you have to understand the difference between, like being an adult involves having an impulse and then having impulse control. And, like, you know, maybe you fantasize about wanting to slap a comedian for saying something about your significant other, but that's not something you actually realize in the moment. Like, and that, that reaction and that it was then that then we were like lauding him for a win after that. It was so awkward. For
yeah.
Me. It was just
standing ovation. Really?
It was cringy. Can I say cringy? It was just like,
why wouldn't you be able to say cringy?
Yeah. It was just so like, gross to watch, and just it really disrespected the entire, I mean, what's left of the sanctity of the Oscars. It turns it into, like, what is it going to be, like a SmackDown, like WrestleMania event or something? Like, give me a break.
It would have been cool if he got tackled on the way up there. That would have been something. You know, and totally justified, too.
By some seat fillers with, like, shoulder pads or something?
I assume they have stage security people. I don't know.
I think the production was, the crew or the management of it, they were a bit stunned and had a lot to make as far as decisions in the moment.
Well, you know, it makes our technical snafus look mild compared to some of the things that we saw going on there. And there was another, when Will Smith was giving his speech, maybe a listener can help with this, they had to cut away from the picture for like almost a full minute while he was still talking. They didn't cut the audio. They just cut the video. I don't know why. No one's talking about why that happened.
Because he was bawling, I think.
Okay, but what, like, you can't show people with tears in their eyes? I mean,
they've done it before in an Oscar ceremony.
Yeah, I'm not. Who makes that call? It's like, okay, this is a little too too blubbery for us.
I think because it was a little.
I don't think he was crying. I think it was. I don't know what it was.
It was a little bit more incoherent than what even like the most emotional.
Okay, but it's what was happening. It's what was happening.
That's true. I mean, he was trying to compose himself and explain and, I don't know, move everyone past it in some kind of way.
Yeah. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is weighing in on this. I just saw this now. NBA legend Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is expressing his feelings on the matter. He put out a blog post arguing that Smith's actions are a blow to men, women, the entertainment industry, and the black community. With a single petulant blow, he advocated violence, diminished women, insulted the entertainment industry, and perpetuated stereotypes about the black community. He basically said that it was troubling on so many levels for men of color. And basically, he says that the incident was more than just a slap to Rock, but rather a slap to women. By hitting Rock, he announced that his wife was incapable of defending herself, kind of what we were saying, against words. This patronizing, paternal attitude infantilizes, did I say that right?
Infantilizes.
Infantilizes. Spelled with an F, not a V.
Infantile.
Yeah. Okay, infantilizes women. It's not a word I say very often. And reduces them to helpless damsels needing a big, strong man to defend their honor, lest they swoon from the vapors. If he was really doing it for his wife and not his own need to prove himself, he might have thought about the negative attention this brought on them, much harsher than the benign joke. That would have been truly defending and respecting her.
That's that professionalism thing, like... You know, you understand, like, the impact, the consequences of your action.
Continuing, this women need men to defend them is the same justification currently being proclaimed by conservatives, passing laws to restrict abortion and the LGBTQ plus community, basically adding that Smith's self-serving acceptance speech, in which he talked about protecting his family in the same way his character in King Richard, was tone deaf. Those who protect don't brag about it in front of 15 million people. They just do it and shut up. You don't do it as a movie promotion, claiming how you're like the character you just won an award portraying. But, of course, the speech was about justifying his violence. Apparently, so many people need Smith's protection that occasionally it gets too much and someone needs to be smacked. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar also argued that actions like Smith's brings back a toxic bro ideal that can be damaging to young men, especially men of color. In fact, Smith's son, Jaden, would later go on Twitter after the incident, boastfully writing, "And that's how we do it." Didn't know about that.
Yeah, I saw that.
Young boys, especially black boys, watching their movie idol not just hit another man over a joke, but then justify it as him being a superhero-like protector, are now much more prone to follow in his childish footsteps. One of the main talking points from those supporting the systemic racism in America is characterizing blacks as more prone to violence and less able to control their emotions. Smith just gave comfort to the enemy by providing them with the perfect optics they were dreaming of.
Yeah.
Wow. Bravo, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Incredible. I couldn't have articulated it better. But yeah, that, I mean, you would, if you want to protect your family, like, your son acting that way could endanger his life.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's just it's bad optics. It's just bad, you know. And the fact that that has been made, you know, crystal clear to everybody involved, that shows how much of a problem this continues to be.
It's so tragic. I mean, just in an instant, like, your perception of someone forever will be associated with this incident. I don't know. I don't want to be more insulted for Chris Rock and, you know, and offended and hurt, but I think he will respond, you know, at a time of his choosing. And
has he said anything?
Nah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's going to be, something that, Will Smith regrets or will not soon get to forget about.
Well, he should be regretting it already, like, a lot more than he is.
A lot.
And you know, people who defend this kind of action, part of the problem, most definitely. Okay, so that was a fun little aside. Of course, the war continues in Ukraine. But supposedly Russia is pulling back, so they say, out of Kyiv. And focusing mostly on the East, kind of like what we were talking about a couple of months ago, that's what they want out of this. And if that's where it winds up, it'll be interesting. I think most Ukrainians won't like that at all. And I certainly don't like the idea of Ukraine having to promise to remain neutral. How do you stay neutral after you get invaded by your next-door neighbor?
I don't understand that.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me. So, I don't know. I see, you know, maybe a compromise where nobody's happy, where the East is, in fact, ceded, and they lose the East, but they gain their position as part of the West for the rest of the country. That makes Russia very angry. That makes Ukraine very angry. And I think when everyone is angry, that's when you have something that is considered a compromise. I don't know. But right now, the horrors continue. The cities are being destroyed. And I'm afraid it might be falling out of our attention. And that's something we can't let happen. We have to continue to pay attention to this. That's why we continue to talk about it. And that's why we need to make sure that it's on the news and that we know what's going on and that we continue to fight back in whatever way possible. And when you see disinformation being spread around, you fight it. You say something about it. You don't let anyone get away with that. You know, people who say that Ukraine is somehow a Nazi regime or nonsense like that Putin used as justification for marching in. All you have to do is think about this for just a couple of seconds and, you know, throw some facts into the fire as well. And you'll quickly learn that Ukraine was no threat at all to Russia. Just look at the you know, size difference. Look at the power difference between them. There were no attacks on Russia. There was no threat to Russia. The only threat to Russia was they were threatening their onward advance into their own country. Yeah, they resisted that. They continued to resist that. I think maybe they surprised Russia. But to say anything, you know, other than Ukraine is defending its land, because that is what they are doing. You know, common people who worked in offices weeks ago are now shooting at oncoming troops and trying to defend their country. How that is not seen as heroic would baffle anyone, I think. That is what's happening. We've never seen such a groundswell of resistance, and dare I say, an effective resistance, because they basically won the fight against Russia so far. Anyway, yeah, they've lost so much; their cities are destroyed, many people have died, but their country is not lost. Their country has not been taken over. They don't have a puppet regime installed. And, you know, Russia has done things like this before, many, many times. Hungary, Poland, you know, you just go down the list. By saying this, you think that we're excusing things that our own country has done or basically minimizing horrors that are going on in other parts of the world? Of course we're not. But we're focusing on this right now based on the facts that are evident, that are obvious, that are provable. And I'm not going to ignore that because we're guilty of an injustice or there's more injustices in the world. This is something that we take a keen interest in and we're going to continue to focus on it. And that's something that I encourage people to do with this or, you know, with anything else that that is worthy of attention. And there are certainly many things going on in the world. This is in Europe. Europe is something that many of us feel an affinity for. It's closer, but I understand. You know, we should be talking about Yemen as well. We should be talking about the Palestinian situation and so many things. So many things that we are guilty of. That countries that we've completely screwed up their history and their present with our actions. But it doesn't take away one iota of the horror that is going on right now in Ukraine because of Russia. And, you know, the other thing that really bugs me is what Biden said when he was in Poland. Great speech, really amazing speech. And then at the end, he added that line saying that Putin cannot remain in power. And everybody, particularly people on the right, conservatives, but you know, some people on the left as well, basically freaked out over that, saying, you can't say that. You can't advocate regime change. Did you really think that's what he was advocating? You know, he explained it the way I read it you know, a couple of days later, saying he was basically speaking from the heart as a human being, as any of us. I mean, Kyle, do you think that Putin should remain in power?
No.
No, you can't say that because you're advocating regime change. You can't advocate. What is this fear of Putin that we all seem to be sharing now? No, he should be driven from power. He should face trial for every single one of the people, both his soldiers and the civilians in Ukraine and the soldiers in Ukraine, that he is responsible for that death and all the other crimes that he has committed over his time in power. All right? Russia will be a better place without him. But that does not mean, I don't see how anybody could have possibly concluded this, that the United States is thinking of marching into Russia and implementing a regime change. That is impossible. We cannot do that for many reasons, but physically we cannot do that, all right? That is not what he was saying. But those people who jump on that immediately, they're looking for a reason. They're looking for a reason to just basically attack the conclusions and question our position right now. And then the effect is that you're basically backing up Putin. You're basically saying, yeah, you know what? You're in power. You stay in power. We're not going to do much. We'll say a few things, but that's it. Let's move on. No. I'm glad Biden said what he said. I get what he said. And he should not apologize for anything that he said. And it's not contradiction in any way to U.S. policy to have an opinion on this person being a horrible person. He already called him a war criminal, you know, so this shouldn't be so surprising.
Yeah, it was a remark. It was an aside. It was exasperation in the really fiery sort of right there in this royal building. I think a palace in Polish. Poland.
Warsaw.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The palace.
Yeah, in Polish.
In Polish.
But were we there when we went to Old Town? I think we must have passed by that.
I think, walked through there looking for a late night.
We were looking for the vodka place.
We looked for... Up there.
There was a vodka place where you could get vodka for very cheap, like, you know, 25 cents.
It was right on a corner of a main
street. It was the place where all the workers went during the communist era. It was a very tiny and overheated place. But we couldn't find it the second time we went. It's almost like it was never there.
And then we found one, like, in a back alley, sort of, it was, like, very punk rock.
Yeah, there were, like, two people there, and neither one was talking to the other, and they were playing punk rock, and yeah, you could get a shot of vodka. You could always get a shot of vodka somewhere, but we were looking for that particular place. I swear it wasn't in my imagination. It existed in the past. In Warsaw, that's a perfect place to make a stand.
Yeah, it had to be said, and it was really the kind of supportive and strident remark that you would expect in this situation.
Yep. Imagine the kinds of remarks that would be made if Trump were still in power. My God, I mean, Ukraine would be lost for sure by now. I don't think he would have cared. I mean, we would be out of NATO. NATO probably would not exist. I know some people would say, yeah, that's a good thing. In this particular situation, no, it's not a good thing, because then, you know, Russia is not going to disband their interests and their military and their alliances. They would simply get stronger and stronger. There's a lot wrong with NATO, but I think in this particular situation, maybe we can figure out a way to make it better, more just, something that can defend against the garbage that we're seeing happening right now.
Yeah, take a breath and reassess what you think, what you know, what you understand of what it is for, sure. But it serves an immediate purpose to, and a lot of people are counting on it in handling this kinds of situation, and that alliance is incredibly strong, and people look to it, and the capabilities are really unmatched in many ways.
Oh, we're going there? Okay. Back to Hollywood. It's time once again for... Boy, we're down to the last three, I guess. This is 2018 we're going to be doing now. It's Films of the Year That Was. This is the feature where Kyle and I see the Academy Award-winning films for every single year since the Academy Awards were invented. And as I said, we're up to 2018 now. We were just talking about what happened. Wait a minute. 2018. So we have 2019 and 2020, and what just concluded on Sunday, that's 2021. So, okay, we have two more to go before we get to the one that just occurred on Sunday. I'm a little concerned because the film that won on Sunday was Apple Plus. It wasn't released in theaters so much as streaming, and I don't have Apple Plus, and I don't want it.
We talked about getting one of their gizmos, and then it's like, you know, like, it's like...
Wouldn't it be something, though, if we've gone through over 100 years of film, and the very last one that won, we can't see because we don't have the right platform?
I start talking about their device, and I sound like a Valley Girl. Like, I almost bought an Apple streaming...
No, I will not allow one in this room. The thing is, I like to have actual physical copy of the domestic films anyway. The foreign films, we mostly stream those because they're harder to get most of the time and a lot more expensive. But I like to have either a DVD or a Blu-ray of every Academy Award-winning film. And so far, we've succeeded in doing that. Reason for that is I want the physical copy because who knows what's going to happen as far as availability, or maybe, you know, some scene or some bit of dialogue will be deemed unacceptable in the future and erased. I don't want that. When you have a physical copy, you own that physical copy. And we're moving into a world where that happens less and less, and you're simply leasing, you know, borrowed time on something.
A block of data.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm holding out. I'm holding out for an actual physical copy. Anyway, that's all beside the point. We're only up to 2018. And what do you want to do, foreign or domestic first?
Foreign.
Foreign. Foreign was the, funny thing. This was a Netflix film.
That's right.
And almost didn't even qualify because of that fact, which I think is stupid. I think, you know, if you make a film, it doesn't matter, you know, where you release it, it's a film, and it should be judged as such.
This is, I think, one of the first years a streaming film was in contention.
And what a choice this was. What a way to start that. The film was Roma. From Mexico, and you know, we've had a lot of Mexican films and or directors recently. We have Roma, we had The Shape of Water, right?
That was
a Mexican director there.
Yeah, this is Alfonso Cuarón.
What was the other one? There was a third one.
Cuarón.
I'll remember. I recently there was a third film that was a Mexican director. I'll look it up, but tell us something about Roma.
Yeah, we're so many films, it's hard to keep track. Roma is about a middle-class family, and their house, seen through sort of a maid and her everyday routine. And it's an incredible film shot in black, and it's black and white, which is a beautiful choice in and of itself. You get a lot of detail, and technically it's kind of a hybrid form, but it tells this story basically of her life there and this family. The father goes away, sort of leaves them, is sort of estranged, and the maid herself gets involved with a guy
who's Mixtec, by the way. She's indigenous.
That's right.
She doesn't speak Spanish.
Thank you. Yes.
When she's talking to her fellow mate, also a Mixtec. Because the whole thing is a foreign language to us.
Yeah.
I should be able to tell the difference between Mixtec and Spanish, but I wasn't really thinking that she was speaking a different language. But yeah, indigenous, and I need to learn a lot more about that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm all about it. I mean, Dene, Cree, all these indigenous languages, they need to be really understood a lot better, especially by the people that cohabitate and are sort of around these parts of the world. So that alone, if you missed it, is a really important detail because, yeah, it sort of speaks to class and her job and how this sort of defines their lives in this home. anyway, the baby is born, stillborn. It's a very sad...
Jumped all the way to the end of the film. Wow. Okay. Well, so much happens before that occurs. Basically, you see her life in the household.
Well, I want to talk about that scene because the shots themselves are really incredible. They're fixed lengths, and there's not a lot of focus, depth of field, sort of rack focusing effects. So you get these sort of wide shots, and they pan very slowly, and almost every shot has this. And the scene where she gives birth is absolutely incredible. They used real nurses and doctors, and she's brought in. It's almost like one shot there, but she's like two or three shots, and then the camera sits beside her as she's going through the agony of this. But it's also very quick. It's like so routine, and they just really just you're sitting there, kind of. It's this shot where you're sort of across the room, and everything from life to death. In you know the sorrow of this stillborn child, you are just bearing witness to this flurry, this frenzy of rescuing a child, and because she had to get there and it took a long time.
Well, it basically, you say the scene was quick. Maybe it felt quick, but it went on for a while, and it was basically so realistic. In fact, what I read was. The actress who played Cleo, the main character, who, by the way, was never an actress before. Basically, her sister was supposed to audition, but she couldn't make the appointment, so she went in her place, and she got the role because she was just so authentic. Basically, the way the film was made, they wouldn't tell the characters what was going to happen, or they even gave them conflicting information, which sort of added to the chaos of a group situation. We don't really know what's going to happen next. When she went into that delivery room, quote unquote delivery room on the set, she honestly didn't know what was going to happen after she went through the whole going into labor process. The people who were quote unquote delivering her baby were actual doctors and nurses who did this for a living. So all, you know, all the procedures and all the vocabulary was all accurate, 100%. But she did not know. She expected to be handed a real live baby when this was over and to find out that, you know, the baby did not survive. She actually had an emotional reaction as if she had lost a baby because she was expecting that. And, you know, if you look at the extra scenes, you see that she had to be consoled afterwards. That is incredible filmmaking. That is something that, you know, I've never seen before.
Yeah, you see the director and the outtakes coming up and trying to console her, being like, you know, I had to do it. But so it comes about. Fermin is her significant other. He is involved in a group of protesters. He leaves her, abandons her in a movie theater. The doctor for the middle class family, the husband of the middle class family, he abandons his wife, or otherwise stays working somewhere. So there's a lot of men abandoning families.
Men aren't the best characters in this.
They're not shining as much here. And so, anyway, he is involved in a revolutionary group, and it is from a protest that erupts after a fire is put out, or a forest fire or something.
I read about that. The fire actually was part of a land dispute.
They
were talking about this. They went to, you know, some, I think, New Year's celebration in the country where they own some land, but there are all kinds of disputes. The film takes place in 1970, by the way.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, kind of important to the story because there's civil unrest and the guy that, fathered Cleo's child, was a member of this, paramilitary group that was basically murdering, students who were protesting various things. So that plays into the story as well. A massive crowd scene in the street. That's accurate. It's all based on reality. The creator of the film, this was all based on his childhood. A lot of things that he saw, it made him emotional because he recognized them. It was like he was living his life again. His father abandoning the family. The very street that he grew up on was right there. You know, it was really incredibly well done.
Los Halcones was the name of the group, paramilitary group, the Hawks. And there's also that scene where they're at the picnic and they're shooting off the guns and the kids are just playing around. It was sort of a picnic scene. I think that's right before the fire erupts and so forth. Anyway, they go to the beach and, there's this interesting bookending of visuals. The film starts out, the credits are, you're looking at certain tiles on the ground.
Oh, yeah, wow.
And they're scrubbing the floor to get dog waste out of the driveway. And there's this theme of, like, dog crap.
That's one theme, yeah, dog crap.
That is basically part of the job there at the house. Anyway, that works its way in as a theme. It's kind of a little bit of humor if you realize how sort of serious the storytelling is.
Well, at the beginning, though, when they're doing this, you know, you're looking at water on the tile of the floor, but in the water, you see reflected this airplane just slowly flying over, and you hear the sound. And how often have we been in a place where there's just this constant sound of planes flying over, you know, really, really high up, but you're underneath the flight path, and that is just this constant sound that is part of life. And they capture that so well. And just by looking at the ground and seeing that reflection of the plane slowly crossing, that was beautiful. And then at the end of the film, you're looking at the sky, and you're seeing the same thing.
Yeah.
It's really incredible filmmaking. Just the way, you know, you pointed this out, there were no zooms in the film at all. Lots of, you know, wide shots where you're basically, you know, slowly following people down a street or crowd scenes, or, you know, it's kind of Fellini-ish in that way.
They talked about the lenses they use. They use fixed focal lengths and maybe a scattering of just a few of them.
But to many people, it might seem like nothing's really going on, that you're just simply watching almost documentary style. That is the magic of this film, is that you're part of it. The camera is part of it. And, you know, this is the second time I've seen this, because I saw it when it first came out. I liked it much better the second time. I think if you're in the mood to basically experience this, you'll really appreciate it, because it's that well done. And what a great first film to win the award that was a streaming film. So
The interiors for this place that built this whole house, it's just incredible. I love the set direction and stuff that they built. They found all this custom tile. They had a very specific aesthetic to recreate every bit of this guy's memory of his childhood. The next film is Green Book.
That's a domestic one, a Green Book. I did not know about this film, hadn't seen it before, but it's basically about
Tony Lip.
Tony Lip, yeah, a real guy. Again, you know, a real story. But this is based in 1962. Which, interestingly enough, is the same year that The Shape of Water, last year's winner, was filmed.
So,
something about 1962. Basically, this guy who works at a club called the Copacabana in New York City is hired to drive this African-American musician into the Deep South as he goes on a tour. He's an incredible pianist.
Dr. Don Shirley.
Yeah, real person. The Green Book is a guide to where black people can stay in the South, and that's how you know where, you know, is safe. And you know, it's kind of like a road film where they get closer after initially being worlds apart. It was, you know, interesting to see, and it was very well done acting wise.
Yeah, they both sort of learn some things, and it's very strong in sort of moral theme, and you're realizing flawed personalities, and of course when you need help, and you know, this bouncer has a good sense. He has a certain way of handling situations that, as the doctor said, he came highly recommended, and of course. He learns a little bit about himself and this doctor and his skill, oddly, he has an appreciation for jazz and sort of music from hanging out at the club at Copacabana. So they find a sort of common appreciation in music, because he really learns to appreciate this doctor's piano playing and the specific songs.
We should point out he's not an actual doctor. He's a doctor of
musicology.
Whatever. Yeah, it's. You know, it isn't really got into, but he thinks when he's told that he's going to be driving a doctor around. First of all, he thinks it's a white guy. He thinks it's going to be this, you know, medical doctor. And
he's an academic.
Yeah, he's an academic.
Exactly. I guess I could say Mr. Shirley, but I'd say Dr. Shirley because that keeps with the character. So I'm saying doctor because he's the doctor in this film.
Mm-hmm.
You can only have one doctor in per film. It's a rule in Hollywood. No, I made that up. So, yeah, basically they are on the road in the Deep South making this tour happen.
And Tony keeps rescuing the Don Shirley, the musician, from uncomfortable situations, such as almost getting beaten up in a bar, being caught in a swimming pool with another guy in a gay situation, which, you know, is also in the Deep South. That's in 1962. That was a tough thing to get through.
One of the venues.
One of the venues, yeah.
They're insulting, basically.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much, you know, he's the guest of honor. The musician is the guest of honor. But he's not allowed to use the restroom.
Or
he has to go out into the outhouse. Or he can't go to the restaurant that's a part of the venue that he's playing in. Things like that where you know, Tony speaks up for him. But, you know, that was my problem with it as well, because it makes Tony into this white savior type of character. You know, a lot of films fall into that trap, and this kind of felt like one of them. And it just had this really kind of storybook ending where everything works out nicely and people accept each other. And, you know, driving up north, you know, the cops even change from pulling people over, constantly pulling them over because, you know, there's a white guy driving a black guy, this guy would be suspicious, throwing people in jail for no reason. And then once you're in the north, the cop pulls you over and just wants to help you fix a flat tire.
And we can all breathe a collective sigh of Hollywood relief.
Yeah.
We know that's not true in the North and in the where they were returning.
But the thing is, it is a true story, so that kind of throws it. But okay, fine. It still is corny. And I don't know if this was the best film of that year. I don't know. It's a good film. It's definitely a good film. Is it the best film? I don't know.
There may not have been a lot of options that year. I know I wasn't really interested at the time, kind of because it was widely panned for some of that campy white savior stuff. But I didn't really know much about it. I didn't know what the Green Book even was.
Black Panther came out that year. That could have been best film. Wouldn't that have been better? Yeah, same year. So
yeah, but see, they were the whole
Bohemian
Marvel
Rhapsody.
Okay, that was I didn't see that either.
Black Klansman.
I didn't see any.
Black Panther and Black Klansman in the same year.
Black Klansman probably should have got it.
Yeah.
We disagree with some of the best pictures. I don't know if that happens when you watch so many in a project like this, but what else for Green Book? Anything else?
It's a decent film. Decent film.
I don't
want
to critique it
too
much.
It's a good feel-good film, but a lot of stereotypes.
A lot.
Yeah.
It tells the story, but yeah, as overall, yeah, I don't know. But I'm glad that they were recognized then. And
I was reading the things that didn't really fit, and a lot of the things were things I picked out. For instance, you hear a dial tone at one point, not the right dial tone for that period of time.
Got it. Yeah,
definitely not. And
it's a common pitfall.
TV remote? Nope, you didn't have a wireless TV remote at that time.
Nice try.
And they had that as well. You know, a couple of little things like that. But otherwise, pretty good to the period.
Yeah.
All right.
A lot to get right. But, okay, we'll see what's on for next year.
And that's 2018. So we have 2019 and 2020, and then we have 2021, which was just decided. And hopefully they release that on Blu-ray or DVD or something. They don't. You know, lots of times they don't even release them on physical media when they're streaming films. Yeah.
It's weird. It's very odd. getting prints and reproductions and Blu-rays, get them while you can, because they don't make very many of them. And then, yeah, you have to sign up for some streaming club.
Uh-huh. You know, you can change the world, I found out. Remember, a couple months ago, I was really upset. I don't know why I was upset, because I really didn't care. But there were the football playoffs, the AFC divisional playoffs, where I think it was Kansas City playing Buffalo.
And
they went into overtime. Kansas City scored a touchdown on the first possession, and Buffalo never even got a chance to have the ball. I'm not that familiar with the sport, so right away I said, that's not fair. That doesn't make any sense. And the NFL heard my comments.
They did?
Yeah, and today they voted to implement a change in the playoffs that will ensure each team will get at least one possession. So thank you, NFL, for listening. I wish the rest of the world listened like you do. You know, maybe Colin Kaepernick now could be signed to the New York Jets because they could really use him.
Seahawks.
Why does Seattle have to steal everything?
Seahawks.
You stole the Quebec Nordiques, okay? And now you want to steal the Jets' best player.
You know, holding grudges like this is what got Russia into trouble.
Yeah, there's a number of grudges I've been held. Mm-hmm. Hey, another bit of good news to end on. Biden administration made their request for the NASA budget for 2023. $26 billion, the largest request for science in the space agency's history. It's 8% more than the enacted federal spending levels or the appropriation bill from fiscal year 2022. The NASA administrator, Bill Nelson, said, greater than a number, statistic, or fact is what the president's budget request represents. It reflects the Biden-Harris administration's confidence in the extraordinary workforce that makes NASA the best place to work in the federal government. It's an investment in the businesses and universities that partner with NASA in all 50 states and the good-paying jobs they are creating. It's a signal of support for our missions in a new era of exploration and discovery. And it practically ensures that there'll be manned exploration of Mars coming up in the fairly near future.
Giddy up.
All right, we are out of time. Oh, I think we might go over by 1 minute. I'm sorry, Finn. Please write to us, otw@2600.com. And remember, justice prevails.
Slava Ukraini.
Good night.
Here comes the helicopter. Second time today. Everybody scatters and hopes it goes away. How many